Welcome. I'm Lori Lee Binstock, and this is a Trauma Survivor Thrivers podcast. Thank you so much for joining us for a Trauma Survivor Thrivers podcast on Mental Health News Radio Network. This podcast is also available wherever you get your podcasts, but I do suggest checking out Mental Health News Radio Network to find all your podcasts related to mental health. Today's guest is Gabrielle Polici, author of the number one Amazon bestseller, All This Healing Is Killing Me. She is also a university professor of holistic health with a doctorate in transformative studies at the California Institute of Integral Studies. With additional degrees in psychology and educational technology from Columbia University, she was named one of the top 100 women of the future in 2022 with her work in emerging technologies. Well, I'm going to call you Dr. Gabby. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm so glad that we've connected and that we're able to have this conversation.
Oh, I know. I read your book. This healing is killing me. I found a lot of information, and I remember being like, oh my gosh, she lived in DC. But another thing, I didn't realize that you had a whole modeling career in New York City before you began this career as a professor and work in holistic medicine. I'm just curious, how did this all happen? Like, what is your story that got you to here? Because I'm sure there's a lot more that happened before the modeling career too.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. Thanks for reading the book. A lot of people interview me and they haven't even opened the book.
No,
so
it was
it's
great.
A much easier conversation, you know, starting there. I think that I talk about this in the book. I was raised to be two things. I was raised to be pretty and I was raised to be smart. Those were the expectations. My mom wanted me to be pretty and my dad wanted me to be smart because he was a physician. So I was put in beauty pageants from the time that I was really young to kind of satisfy my mom's wishes. And then I was academically pushed throughout my career. And the expectation was that I would get some advanced degree, like a medical degree or a law degree or something like that. And so I pursued both of those really relentlessly at the same time, getting straight A's and doing the modeling. I tried modeling professionally for a while, but I didn't resonate with the industry. They kept telling me I was fat and I needed to lose weight. And it was everything from like a bad TV drama when you see behind the scenes of, you know, babies in beauty pageants. It was all of those things. And so then I ended up going back to school, getting a bunch of degrees and focusing on physical and mental health, which is what I've been, you know, teaching and pursuing for my career. So it's been an interesting journey. That's why I wrote the book. So people could learn a little bit about how I overcame some of my own challenges, how I navigated different decisions, and the tools and resources that I used to move along the healing journey.
What was for you the red flag where you were like, I need some healing for myself. And I need to make some changes in my career path.
I felt that way from day one. I had all kinds of symptoms early from the time that I was really young. I had a lot of fear, a lot of panic, a lot of nightmares, insomnia. I would scratch at my skin. As I got a bit older, the symptoms migrated to different parts of my body. I got cysts on my ovaries. I got migraines. I got panic attacks. And it just, my body and my mind continued to tell me, we need help. And I was always looking and searching for things that could help. And it was a long time until I found the medicines that I needed. Because I grew up in a Western paradigm. My dad was a physician, and there's just not much that you can do in the Western paradigm for trauma recovery and chronic, you know, post-traumatic stress symptoms. There's just like not a lot you can do. You can medicate it. It doesn't heal it. Right. You can do therapeutic modalities. You can do EMDR. You can do mindfulness and things, but it doesn't really take it out by the roots. So it just took a really, really long time to find treatments and protocols and practices and resources that could really restore, regenerate. Like before we got on this call, we were talking about how do you regenerate the mind with psilocybin. Like it took a long time until I found the things that were the best medicine for me.
And how did you figure that out? Because I feel like, I mean, even I have friends now who are just like, oh, you know, yeah, I hear about that. I hear about psilocybin, but I'm not sure that's the way for me to go. Because obviously there's all the stigma that's behind it where everyone's just assuming like you take a dose and you're just on the floor hallucinating. When it's, there's obviously a range of them. So yeah, for you, like, how did you just decide, like, how did you get introduced to it? I think that's what a lot of people, like, I could easily tell my friends, like, oh, you should try it, but they're not going to try it.
Yeah, ironically, I just wrote another book.
Amazing.
It's called The Last Ceremony, and that'll be coming out this year. And it's the story of how I was introduced to medicine, psychedelic medicine, plant medicine, and how I navigated that journey as well. So the short version is that I was someone who was the most unlikely candidate to ever use psychedelics, because part of my wellness work was working in addiction treatment centers in Southern California for several years and working with addicts and preaching this ministry of don't ever take any drugs. You know, the sober life is the healthiest life. And I also grew up with all that kind of propaganda and stuff that, you know, none of these medicines were healing and you should be able to do everything with purity, with breath, with, you know, abstinence. So I was the most unlikely person to approach these. And then during the pandemic, I was doing some volunteer work on different properties and one thing led to another. And I ended up studying with a medicine woman in New Mexico who introduced me to peyote, and I learned to work with peyote. And then I was introduced to another medicine woman in Guatemala and she introduced me to psilocybin and I worked with that. And then I was introduced to a church that serves ayahuasca. And so then I explored that. So it was just a series of serendipitous events that brought the plant medicine into my life and completely shifted not only my perspective about their potential for healing and their use as like actual medicinal tools, but also completely transformed me. So then I was able to say like, this actually really helped me. And if you're someone that's fearful or skeptical, I get you. It wasn't until my 40s that I was able to embrace this. So I understand where you're coming from. Oh, did you see the fireworks?
Oh my gosh, where did that come from?
I don't know. The universe was agreeing with us.
I mean, I was completely on board. I feel like that was appropriate. I don't even have a person who did. That's pretty amazing. But yeah, if you're just listening to this, you should check out the YouTube because fireworks just showed up. Just for Dr. Gabby. Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah. So I can relate to people being scared, being skeptical, not knowing how to navigate, but that's a familiar position for me because as someone that got into holistic health more than 20 years ago, I was having this conversation about meditation and yoga 20 years ago. People were like, oh my God, that's weird. No, like I'm embarrassed or like I was having these conversations. And so I think it takes time for social acceptance and to lose the stigma and to become integrated into the mainstream.
Wow. So I, you know, I love the title of your book, probably one of my favorite titles of a book, All This Healing is Killing Me, because it is not like a straight line forward or, you know, just getting better, right? There, it's like three steps forward, four steps back, you know, at least for me, it's just, at first, I was like, it should be a straight line. I should just constantly be getting better. And I was actually disappointed when it wasn't. So it took a little while for me to figure that out. But I want you to elaborate on the title of your book and why you chose it.
Same as you. I think we had this conversation when we met at Wonderland. Like, this is hard. This is really, really hard. This is really, really hard. And sometimes you don't know if you're making progress. And sometimes you don't know if it's easier to just go into distraction mode and just say, forget it, I'm not doing this, I don't care anymore. Like, it's difficult. It's really difficult. And I wanted to honor the fact that it was difficult for myself and for so many other people who are on that path. And I wanted to highlight the fact that it is really a warrior choice to just keep going, even when you feel like you're never going to get to the end of it and it's never going to get any better. To continue to try different modalities, like, okay, well, let me try acupuncture. Well, let me try this pharmaceutical. Like, if you're trying, I think you deserve the credit. And to make people feel less crazy, because if nobody around you is talking about how hard or confusing or challenging it is, then you can feel really crazy. Like, is it just hard for me? Like, is everybody else just making progress and I'm two steps forward, one step back, like getting sober, relapsing? Like, is it only me?
Right.
And so I enjoy sharing things that make people feel seen. And that was one of the, you know, comments I got a lot with the book, is like, I've never felt so seen as I have by reading your book. Like, I can relate to this. And that, I think that's important, that we're having those conversations.
I mean, I feel like it's relatable to everyone who's on this journey of healing, because it is difficult. It's like, you know, when people used to tell me like, oh my gosh, you're so brave. Like when I started my healing journey, I was in a treatment center and everyone's like, oh my gosh, you're so brave. I'm like, what are you talking about? Because at that moment, like I was in a treatment center and I was coming out and it was just, you know, everything was still going really well. And then it just it just got really difficult. And so, you know, I'd be ashamed when people would be like, oh, you're so brave. I'm like, am I? And the truth is yes, because then I chose to keep going, and just like you chose, and now look at you, you're thriving. And it's so beautiful to find purpose or post-traumatic growth through all of this pain, because it is painful.
Yeah. The last thing you feel is brave when you're doing this shit. Even when I was writing the book, and everyone's like, you're writing a book. And I'm at home like crying and writing and crying. The last thing you feel is brave, you know, but like, that's the feel the fear and do it anyway. It is courageous. That's what courage is. Like, if it were easy, it wouldn't be brave, you know? So and it's important to own that too. Part of like, the conversation that I have with people is like, don't be healing all the time. like compartmentalize this, right? Like, you have your dedicated time that you're doing this stuff, but then like, take time to cultivate a practice of joy and fun and, you know, doing things that feel really good. So you have that balance, especially now that I'm like coaching other writers, because they'll be like, I don't know if I can do this. And I'm like, no, you definitely cannot write about trauma all day long, but that's not the goal. The goal is like, one day you write about a hard thing and the next day you write about the blessings and the light and the gifts and the guides that showed up for you, you know, because it's both and, right? It's not just the hard, but it's also the thriving. Like you said, it's a balance of the two.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of want to go back to what you were talking about earlier about your mom and your dad. And it's just so, I feel like that's how a lot of people were, especially, you know, in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Like, the moms want you to be pretty. Like, that was your focus. And then the dad, you know, maybe they want you to be smart. But I think that's amazing that your dad, you know, there was a somewhat of a balance, even though they're kind of extreme balances. But I could understand how that would also be very like traumatic a little bit, having to like live up to like both ideas. How was that for you? Did you struggle with perfection, like that that trauma of like trying to make sure everything's perfect? Make sure I'm super smart, which you were obviously and are now with all of the degrees, but like you had to be pretty. Like, did you feel like you always had to be put on a show, especially being in pageants?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. It was a nightmare. was a total nightmare. I mean, I don't think we've figured out parenting. I don't think we really have figured it out. I think the pendulum kind of swings. I think you have like the era that my parents grew up in, which was an era of war and depression. And so everything was about work ethic, scarcity, survival, right? And then you got to the generation where they were raising me. And my era was like, you have to be the best. You have to be the best at everything, right? And so like we really got a big lesson of perfectionism and this kind of, and then I think the generation after me, there was a lot of like, everything you do is great. And like more of like a sense of freedom, you know, which has its advantages and disadvantages. Cause you know, sometimes constraints are good. Sometimes discipline is good, you know? So I don't think we've figured it out. I think parenting is imperfect. I think you do have to take whatever you get, and you have to transform it into something else. You know, if you don't get the boundaries, you have to figure out boundaries. If you, you know, get the perfectionism, you need to figure out how to practice self-love and self-acceptance and not just always be grading yourself and comparing yourself to others, right? So I think you just have to take whatever you've gotten and you own it and you figure out the healthiest version. And like my version of healthy may not be your version of healthy. Right. You know, I know for me, I had to find what my truest essence was, what my values were. I had to do a lot of self-discovery work, and then I had to align myself with those things. But that might be different for somebody else. Like, you know, finances might be really more important to somebody than personal growth or romantic relationships. Like you're married with kids, I'm not. Like that might be something that's more important for you to cultivate and learn good, you know, interpersonal communication or good, you know, longevity of relationships. So I think we all have to just, I never victimize myself with this stuff. Like I got what I got. And like it's compost for the garden. Like let's figure out the garden.
Oh, that's beautiful.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You're helping. You're growing. You're growing and evolving and passing on this knowledge and this wisdom through your books, which I'm really excited about. You know, when we do you, I mean, I was going to ask, like, do you struggle with some of those things now, like perfectionism and all of that stuff now, even after your healing? Because I'm still struggling. I'm still healing, though. I'm 39.
Yeah. Get through your 40s.
Get through my 40s. And that, yeah, I know. 49. I am looking forward. I'm looking forward to like evolving and growing and not giving a shit about what other people think. Because
you're on the cusp of that. You're on the cusp. You're all like, you're on the cusp of that. You're like right on the verge. You like, you're at, when you're 39, you like know who you are and you're like, I know who I am. Now what am I going to do?
Right. This is where I am. I'm like, you know, I know what's right and wrong and what I want. I'm like, there are certain things like old patterns that I fall into sometimes when I can't get it together. And then I'm like, wait, that's not how I wanted to feel about this certain thing. You know,
this is what you'll work out in your 40s. By the time, like 10 years from now, by the time you get to 49, you, knowing you and what I know about you and the path that you're on, you will have figured it out and you will no longer accept the things that no longer serve you. You will be like, no, that's not what we're doing.
Those are my goals. And so this is my constant goal that I'm constantly trying to work towards.
You're definitely on track to that. And like so much of that is what you're doing. It's these conversations. It's this investment. It's the self-awareness. It's so much of what you're doing is going to get you there. I don't believe that people get there without the investment. I think you can easily get to your 50s feeling worse than you felt in your 40s, easily, where your health is breaking down and you haven't cleaned up your mind and you're just surviving, you know? And I have people in my life, like in my family, that's all they can do. And that's also okay. If like, that's the best you can do. Like life is hard.
Life is hard.
We don't have to add perfectionism to healing. You know, like, how well are you healing? We don't have to do that and compare ourselves to other people who are healing. Like, leave it alone. You know? Leave it
Yes.
alone.
Oh, one thing I wanted to talk about, and this is kind of going off, because you and I were on a panel at Wonderland, and even before, I think we talked about this before, during, and maybe a little bit after about the bad trip, because I think you suggested a book that I read that I actually have in my Audible, because I forgot it was like The Midnight. I don't know if I can what it, but you suggested a couple things, and I talked about the bad trip because I feel like it was the bad trip that kind of, when I had the bad trip when I was 16 years old, it was on mushrooms, on psilocybin, that was just picked out of cow dung from a pasture. It wasn't anything that was from anyone, but I just specifically remember just having a bad trip and remembering I'm a childhood sexual abuse survivor, and I at that time I was like 16 or 17 years old, and I had like completely buried that. I was just like I honestly didn't remember it had happened until my that mushroom trip, and I consider it a terrible trip because I was just like, I don't know how I cannot. I wanted to just not remember that anymore, right? Like I was trying to push it down. It's like, stop thinking about it, stop thinking about it. And the more I resisted, the more it was just coming at me. And it was terrible. But then that kind of, when I started reading and learning about psilocybin and how it actually helps you heal, and this was like years and years ago, I was like, oh, maybe that's what it was doing. It was trying to tell me what I needed to do to heal. But you as this person who studies this transformative healing and all this holistic healing, I wanted to get your perspective on it, about the bad trip, and is it really a bad trip?
I love your story about the mushrooms. That's what they do. They're your friend, your best friend that's not going to lie to you. You know,
Yes.
they're the friend that tells you like, "No, you're not being honest," or "No, that doesn't serve you." Like that's their intent, right? And in the same way that you would have a relationship with a friend that did that to you, you'd be like, "I'm never talking to you again." Like, okay, you can do that. That's your prerogative. That's fine. Like, you don't want to be around that friend. That friend is too real. Like, okay. I bet people cut me off because the stuff that I say is too honest. Like, okay. You know, but that's your mushroom friend. That's your ayahuasca friend. That's your friend. And you can choose to not be in relationship with that friend. And the mushroom's never going to not be the mushroom. You know, the mushroom is always going to tell you the truth. And if the truth is that there's a lot of stuff that needs to be purged, then that's what it's going to tell you. The ways that I think the language is difficult. I think also because we often qualify discomfort as bad. We qualify anger as bad or grief as bad, negative emotions, we say, right? Negative emotions, bad trip, right? So we have these qualifiers that polarize the experience. And in my old age, I have come to feel like you're just on a range of comfort to discomfort. It feels good or it doesn't feel good. You're just on a range. That's it. And the things that are often more painful or more uncomfortable can feel like a bad trip. That's not saying that there's some shit you shouldn't be doing, because there are sometimes when the medicine is not appropriate for you and it will harm you. And for example, you don't take mushrooms if you're on lithium. You don't take ketamine if you have a thyroid problem. You don't do ayahuasca if you have heart disease. Like, there are appropriate medicines for appropriate things. And if you have a heart attack on ayahuasca and die, that's terrible. Like, we're not trying to have a trip that's fatal or that's damaging you in an irrevocable way. So taking those and putting them in the parking lot, like, we're avoiding these things. These are dangerous. These are unsafe. That being said, if it's uncomfortable, my deepest belief being in relationship with these plants is that it's just sh trying to amplify for you things that you may be avoiding or ignoring, which is exactly how you framed it when you talked about it. You were like, I didn't want to see. I didn't want to see. And so my experience is, if you go into relationship with those plants, and you sometimes I'll ask the mushroom, like I was buying a house like a few months ago, and it was like a really challenging expanding experience for me. I never bought a house. I was terrified, and I was taking the mushrooms to help me, and I have a conversation with them before I would take them, and I'd be like, look, I know you're gonna show me my limiting beliefs, and I know you're gonna show me all these things, but can you please just be nice to me, like can you please just be gentle with me. And I and in the same way that you learn to talk to a pet or like your favorite plants or something like that, I do think that you can use your intention and use your communication to make it a little bit more comfortable, or don't dose as high, or add some other herbs like some sassafras, or you know, some other things, some kava, to like create a gentle container, or have people there to support you, or have integration practices afterwards where you're doing some therapeutic work or some journaling, right? There's so many things that can be added to it to make it easier. But I don't really resonate with the bad trip language. That just is just not really true for me. So
no, I agree, because I mean, what I thought was a bad trip, if I actually looked at what it was showing me, I mean, at 16 I could have resolved a lot of the problems that really amplified into adulthood and after I had children. So I ever since then, I was like, oh, I actually don't like this idea of a bad trip. But like you were saying, yes, there's some things that don't work. Like I know that, you know, I had a therapist who said, you know, it's not a great idea to be on Zoloft and take MDMA. Like that's not a great mix. But they also told me, like, you know, psilocybin can be harsh. So if you want to if for the first time getting into like it therapeutically, maybe start with MDMA, because I feel like MDMA is your friend that's going to just give you a better perspective on it, not necessarily be
it's
that hard
hug you.
It is going to hug you while it tells you all the bad things that happen and why. So that was eye-opening for me, because for the first time I was like, I think I want to try LSD. They're like, I don't know if that's a great idea, but you might want to check out like MDMA. And then I was just like, well, what about mushrooms? Because I've never, I you know, just in case, because I felt like I was ready for the harsh talk, but they were like, let's soften it a little bit as you're starting to deal, because that was like around the first time, I think within like a few months prior was when I actually talked about the abuse out loud for the first time ever. So it was like, let's start slow with something that's a little nicer. And that was the MDMA. And you
great.
Know what? The psilocybin did help me, because eventually I did do the psilocybin, and it was really harsh, it felt like it cleansed me. You know, I felt like it just cleaned all the emotions that I had been like that had been stuck. It like just cleaned it out.
Yeah, I had said on one interview that I feel like the medicine is a laxative. It just kind of like it clears out so much stagnant energy and emotion, which means you might have that day of like purging, whatever that is. It could be crying, or it could be like whatever's happening to you. But to me, I always do feel a lot cleaner and clearer having done some kind of journey.
Yeah, no, I do. I definitely feel lighter after a big journey. I do microdose, but the big journeys that's when I'm just like I can breathe. Like if I've been
holding your breath,
holding my breath, borderline panic attack, it's when I take the mushrooms, and then afterwards I'm like, wow, that I feel incredible. And I feel like a lot of people are just like, you know, I did this when I was in college and I didn't feel like that. And I was like, well, what else were you doing? Were you also drinking? Because that could have been the hangover too, because it is definitely feels a lot different, you know, doing it therapeutically versus like recreationally with like whatever else I was given, you know, when I was 16, my teens. So
yeah,
it's different.
The other thing that I think is worth mentioning is that now that I have been working with plant medicine as part of a protocol, right? I still do yoga. I still do fitness. Mm-hmm. I still try to eat well. Now that it's been part of my life for a couple of years, personally, I feel like my capacity to experience emotion has expanded in the sense that I always felt like there was too much emotion for my personal container, right? My body was this big, but the emotion was this big. And right. So I always felt like I was like flailing, like it didn't matter what the emotion was, fear, grief, whatever. It always felt like it was too big for me, you know? Mm. And now it feels like my container is bigger. And that there might be a storm passing through, but for the first time ever, I'm able to witness and I don't feel like it's too big for me. Wow. You know, I feel that they've created enough space that I can be like, oh, I'm really, really angry. Like, look how angry I am, you know? And I can just see how angry I am. And then I'm like, okay, what do we need to do? Is there anything we need to do? Should we tell somebody? Should we whatever? And there's just enough space that I get the choice. I get to make the choice how I want to respond. I never had that before for my whole life.
That's like, beautiful.
I couldn't do it. And I was so mad that I could see other people doing it. And I'm like, that's not fair. It's not like, how come they get to do that? I don't get to do that, you know?
Oh my gosh. That's exactly. I mean, now there is some pause. There's some times where I will like lose it. I feel like there's beauty when there's not a lot of stimulus around you. Like my kids, like there are times where I'm like, I know I need to respond differently right now. I know I need to respond differently right now. And then I react. And so that's very difficult, but I know that there's a pause. Like I can like separate myself from like that reaction and like actually respond. Sometimes I'm not saying it's, again, I'm still on this healing journey.
It's not a perfect science. Not a perfect science.
But it is a beautiful thing to be able to like be like, wow, I feel mad. I'm very angry. Should I separate myself right now? Like, should I just take a break right now? Instead of like losing my shit, which is like that was like constant. Like that was like normal me. Like I thought that
me
was
too.
Normal. It was like normal, like my road rage, like you know, my kids would be like, oh, mom's cursing again, you know, like she's very mad. But now I'm just like, I'm able to be like, wow, that was a really bad decision they made, that, and I'm just going to chill. I'm just gonna keep going. But yes, I would be very reactive, and I feel like that is, I feel like that's a lot of the medicine, the psychedelics, just helping me give me some space within myself, clearing out all of this unnecessary junk that was in there, all these old narratives, and just letting it go.
And what your listeners, I suspect, are going to want to know is like, where do I start? Like,
yes.
That was the hardest thing. Like, where do I do MDMA? Do I do mushrooms? Do I go to a doctor? Do I go to I think that's an important part of the conversation, because this isn't the type of thing that you can just roll into the local yoga studio now, right?
You're
not just like rolling up to Starbucks, like, yeah, I'll take some mushrooms with my latte. It's like, this is something that's difficult to navigate, right? So you're a great resource, right? I'm a resource, like having trusted resources that can have a conversation with you and say, this is what I tried. These are the doctors I recommend, the therapists. These are the vetted retreat centers. You know, there are directories that are more reputable than others that will tell you what retreats are the best. There's the conferences. You and I met at Wonderland. There was the conference Psychedelic Science in Denver,
right,
which is also a great resource. I just spoke about psychedelics at South by Southwest. They now have 3 days of programming about psychedelics there. You can watch the videos. You can read the books, right? So I think educating is a big part of this, like helping people make safe and ethical choices and being resourced for people to help them navigate.
Amazing. Yes, I know that, I mean, even my friends are just like, oh, what do you, they still have questions, even though I tell them, but I know it's a big decision to make. It's a big decision to make. But again, like, like Dr. Gabby said, we are resources. And so feel free to reach out. And obviously, I'll have all your information in the show notes. But is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I think gentleness and kindness is an important practice. Like, we all need to be a lot nicer to ourselves, you know. And you mentioned like telling your story for the first time. Part of the work that I do now is helping people tell their stories. And for me, even with the plant medicine, even with all the work I had done, until I could own the story, until I could write it down and tell it to other people, which I just couldn't get it completely out of my body. So I do this methodology that I made up called Writing as Medicine, which is really just like the transformative work of writing and telling the story to other people. I think that's critical. Even if you just find one person, like you don't have to go on a podcast about it, right? But like even if you're just witnessed by other people, it dissipates the shame and that emotional charge around the shame, and it lets the light in, right? Which is ultimately what we're trying to do. We're trying to let the light into all those dark places, but that requires like some courage for you to do that, and it requires a gentleness and a kindness in the process. So I think that that's important as well.
Yeah, no, that I agree. I mean, I held my story in for like 25 years. Like it was really hard. And once it like came out, it was like, whoa. I mean, even that was just like the release of that. I just felt so much lighter. It just that, just saying it, and that just took seconds. And it literally transformed my life.
And now you get to do this, right? Now you get to talk about all the different ways that you can, you know, survive and thrive. So it changes the trajectory of your life. It just changes, right? The opportunities and the connections and everything that comes after.
Yes, exactly. My gosh. Oh, well, Dr. Gabby, thank you so much for joining me. I am so grateful to you.
I'm so grateful for you.
Well, that was Gabrielle Polici, author of the number one Amazon bestseller, All This Healing Is Killing Me. For more info on Gabby and where to purchase her book, check out the show notes. Check out Authentic Insider at traumasurvivorthriver.com. That's traumasurvivorthriver.com, as well as past episodes of a Trauma Survivor Thrivers podcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe to my email list to get Authentic Insider magazine in your inbox monthly. You've been listening to a Trauma Survivor Thrivers podcast. We'll be back next week when I speak with Josh Halu, former Army Ranger and founder of the Psychedelic Exchange, when we discuss the immense potential of psychedelics in mental health and the veteran community. Again, thank you so much for being a part of the conversation. Take care.